Thanks for showing up to my talk on hosting CTFs with Verline, where Verline is a tool I've written for exactly this purpose. First of all, about me. My name is Ruben Gonzalez. I am currently an InfoSec master's student here at this university. Let me start with an apology. I'm really not fit today, so if I'm a bit slow from time to time or I have to take a sip of my tea, please excuse me. Hello. As I said, I'm a master's student here and I currently live in Bonn. So, what is this talk about? The last three semesters, I was tutor for software security at another university. And there we spiced up our lecture with CTFs, and I want to pass on some of the experience we've made and talk about the tool I've written to host CTFs. So the talk has three segments. First of all, I'm going to talk about what a CTF actually is. Then I'm going to talk about the principles of problem-based learning, which is important in my opinion. And then I'll show the actual tool this talk is mainly about. Okay, first segment. Can you maybe raise your hand who knows what capture the flag means? Okay, a lot, not everyone though. Okay, nice. So I'm gonna give a brief introduction then. This is a capture the flag competition. As you can see, hello, the red team here is trying to steal a flag, and the gray team is trying to prevent the red team to steal this flag. They're playing on a field that looks somewhat like this. Each team has a base. The base contains a flag. And the other team's goal is to get the flag and bring it to the own base. That way they receive a point. So both teams have to defend their own flag while trying to steal the flag from the other team or other teams. So this talk is about software security or IT security in general. So what does that have to do with IT security? Well, they're playing basically the same game. These are two teams, one in the back and one in the front, playing the CTF. And how does it work? Basically, each team hosts vulnerable services. The services are usually provided by the organizers of the CTF, but hosted by the teams participating. And the goal of this team is to steal the flag of the other team by using the vulnerability in the service, while at the same time defending their own flag by patching their own services. Once they got a flag, they submit it to a system, a scoreboard, and receive their points. In this version of the game, the flag doesn't consist of cotton. It's usually just character strings that are weighted, because if it's hard to exploit a service, you get more points than for an easy service. Okay, so one last thing. There are mainly two types of CTFs played. The first one is attack defense, that is exactly what I've just showed you, where the goal is to steal the flag hosted in a service of the other team. These are a bit difficult to host, especially for large setups. So these are usually played at conferences or locally at universities or something like that. The second type is the Jeopardy CTF, named after the game show, where the organizer hosts the services, and the goal for every team is just to exploit the service hosted by the organizer and steal the flag there. The Jeopardy CTF has some big advantages. For example, it's not as time critical, it's not real time as an attack defense. If I have an attack defense for 8 hours, I need to pay full attention for this time. Whereas in Jeopardy, there's not really a real-time element, so it can last for days or even longer, and teams can just work in their own pace, which is good for educational purposes and easier to organize. So since a lot of you know what CTFs are, this is a typical scoreboard, as you would imagine it, a ranking with points. Now, a bit more interesting, this is an example task I picked out because I liked it from the Hekaloo Jeopardy-style CTF that is organized by the Flux Fingers, which is a CTF team of the Ruhr Universität Bochum, which is nearby. And this is a typical easier task. You have, in this case, a website and one field where you can interact with the website, where you can enter something. So this is your starting point. You don't have background information, you just have this website and you need to get a flag. As an example for a more complex task, from the same CTF actually, there was this, the motto that year was Wild Wild Web, this dating site Hot Cows, and it has a lot of interaction. It has a chat that actually works, the cows reply. You can get a premium account, you have a user management, you can even write the administrator an email via a form. And that's also a problem. You don't know where to start, but you need to get a flag. In this case, you had to contact the administrator and use a cross-site scripting. Here, an example for another task. It doesn't always have to be a software service or a website. Here, there are two weak RSA keys. And of course, in your lecture, you learn, okay, short keys are bad, but once you, because you got a communication here, once you actually wrote a script that decrypts RSA encrypted messages, then you really understood how the system works and why it is bad to have short keys. Last thing you need to know, a lot of teams, after they solved a particular challenge, they write a write-up how they solved this challenge and publish it often, which is a good form of documentation for them, but also for others who weren't able to solve the task. Yeah. Typical categories nowadays include almost everything. Typically, is a reversing or web, crypto, but you see everything in CTFs nowadays, from simple websites to whole operating systems that you need to exploit. So, if you didn't know about CTFs, I hope this was a brief introduction. There's a website called ctftime.org that lists a lot of CTFs. So if you're interested, check it out. There's currently a CTF hosted online almost every week, which is really cool. So, secondly, this talk is about hosting CTF with Perlin, not about participating. And nowadays, a lot of institutions, especially universities, use capture the flag competitions, which is really cool, but often they do it in a manner that's not, that doesn't really help students. Which is why I included this segment about problem-based learning, which are very basic principles that you should follow if you host a CTF. Yeah, as it states here, the idea behind PBL is that the starting point should be a puzzle, a riddle, a query. And of course you can argue that this type of learning has been around forever, but the problem-based learning, how I'm going to talk about it, is the formal defined one. So there's been a lot of research about that it works very well in combination with lectures, not as a replacement though, but together with a lecture, and that it works really well to assimilate fragmented knowledge into applicable skills. So if you have a lecture or a training in your company or university that teaches you the theories, problem-based learning is great to make the students understand the theory, connect the dots, and get applicable skills out of this theory. The goals are to promote problem-solving, independent learning, also to evaluate independent learning, and last not but not least, also the motivation is a big part. So PBL, these are the four basic points. If you host a CTF, you should take into consideration. Very basic, very easy. And if you follow them, you usually have good outcomes. So first one is authentic problem. That's something often violated. That just means the problem should be as close to a real world problem as possible. And also that there should be no detailed background information on the problem itself. Secondly, you work in small groups. Third, the teacher steps back, is a tutor. He doesn't help with any problems. He might moderate the learning process, but he definitely should not help. And the individual knowledge gain usually comes naturally. That just means if you work in a group, you can discuss with people, but everybody should do research on their own and then discuss with the others. But as I said, if you do a CTF in small groups, that usually comes naturally. So we hosted a CTF at the ATV Konstanz, which is a university in Konstanz. Taking these rules into consideration to spice up the software security lecture. Afterwards, we gathered feedback from the participants. There was a bit over 30 students, I think 31, mainly IT students, but also we had some from electrical engineering. And afterwards, we got a survey for the feedback. One of the questions was, did you have fun? And the CTF was obligatory, so people had to participate. But still, most of them said they had fun, or at least a little, which is nice. But even more interesting was this question, did you learn something new? These graphs look a bit too good, but these are from the actual feedback. Did you learn something new? And everybody said yes, which is interesting because the tasks of the CTF were matched to the topics taught in the software security lecture, and the CTF was at the end of the lecture. It was really cool to see the students really invest a lot of time, more than they would usually do with a worksheet, and still having fun and still learning something new. Why I included this PBL is, as I said, a lot of institutions are picking up on this idea of capture the flag competitions, which is cool, but sometimes they don't take problem-based learning or other learning methods into consideration. I included an example for this here by the vendor Hacking Lab, which is used by some universities. It's a company that hosts Capture the Flag competitions. There, if you solve a task, you have to write up and submit it, and then the write up gets assessed. So in this case, you got the image of a router, and you're supposed to run it. The router had a software service running with a vulnerability. And how I solved it was just download the image, convert it to a format you can use with, mount the image, grep for flag, and I received the flag, which is, in a normal CTF, this would be a valid solution because I got the flag. But in this case, the write-up actually gets assessed. So I can't exploit the service as I would. I have to specifically exploit it how the creators wanted me to exploit it. And that, of course, is not authentic. It's not an authentic problem. And it doesn't motivate. It's frustrating. So that was a really frustrating task. So that was an introduction to CTFs and problem-based learning. Now I'll talk about the tool I have written to host these Capture the Flags at my university. It is also used by a company in Köln, Telexium, which is also a sponsor at this conference. This tool, I wrote it as free software, and it's a tool to work with. It's not your enterprise tool to just use. You're supposed to work with it. So first of all, why would you use a tool to host CTFs? Why would you host CTFs if there are so many online? First of all, the CTFs online, they vary heavily in difficulty and quality. And if you have a lecture or a course, you might not want to depend on a CTF you don't know what is going to be about. So it might not match in content and also not in time. It's often during the weekend. So you can use Berlin to host your own CTFs whenever you want with the topics you want. So the goals of Berlin basically bring CTFs to the classroom, make it easy to spice up your lecture, your course in software or IT security with a CTF. Make it very easy to set up a CTF within seconds. It's written in Django, which is a Python framework. Just because I'm very lazy, and Django is an extremely cool framework that allows you to write applications in no time. Okay, so I'm gonna show the tool, which is why most people came probably. So, I have two browsers open. It's a web application. At least the front end is a web application. The Chrome one is a teacher's view. The Firefox one here is a student. So as a student, you just have the different courses. And a course is essentially a CTF. I mean, in this game mode, you have a threshold, a certain amount of points you need to pass, kind of like an exam. You have a beginning and a deadline for flag submission and the short description. And the rest is just your usual CTF. You have problems here. You have a flag submission and you have a scoreboard. Here somebody already has some points. They are in red because they haven't reached the threshold yet. Okay. So the student is, first student is just a normal CTF. More interesting is the teacher's perspective. Here you have an additional tab about problems. So if I look into them, these are the different problems I currently have installed in this local installation. You can see, but I will dive into that a bit more later, you can see the deployment options are different. I have challenges that are only downloadable, but also Docker or some run in the VirtualBox VM. I'll show that to you in a second. So as a teacher, I just create a problem, a course. And I show how to create problems in a second. I choose if I want a scoreboard. Maybe sometimes you don't want a ranking. I can say if the students have to submit a write-up with their solution, start a deadline. I can set a password and a threshold. And then I can assign problems to the course. So now in this case, they have tags and names and categories. So I want a web challenge, maybe something remote file inclusion. I'll add that. Maybe some reversing. Let's leave it at that. Now I can assign points. These are the points the problem creator wanted for the task, but I can overwrite them for the course. Now the course is created, and if I go back to the problems page, I see the system now starts the problems that got newly assigned. So this can be seen as like a high-level singleton. The problems that are in a course are running. The problems that are not used in a course are shut down. Okay, so I go back to the student's perspective. I see the new course, and I can join it with, I set a password, yeah. And this is my course, it's a CTF. I see in the meantime, now because it's a local installation, there's only one worker that starts and stops the VMs. Usually it's one worker per CPU in a real deployment. So this is not initialized yet, but here, this is a problem. This is a CTF task. I have a brief description and, in this case, a link. And that's your problem. You don't have background information, you just need to receive a flag somehow. Exactly. Okay. So, So the other one also started, Again, here I can download a binary, and this is not a web page, it doesn't look too good. Interesting. Oops. In this case, it's just a snake game. It's without background information. It's just a problem you have to solve. Okay. So, a teacher can just assign problems, use problems, create courses, and for students it's basically a CTF. It's just a help for teachers or institutions to set up CTFs really fast. So these problems I was talking about, obviously they're very important. If you want to write your own problems, they consist of only three parts: a config file for meta information, a setup or provisioning script, and the content directory with the actual content of the problem. So you can exchange them very easily via a USB stick or Git repositories or whatever you prefer. And you can just deploy them either to docking, the Docker, VirtualBox, or DigitalOcean. Whereas I would recommend using Docker only for testing because it doesn't offer isolation as a real VM does. And DigitalOcean is a cloud provider, which is handy because then the problem doesn't get deployed locally, but it spins up a droplet, a VM in the cloud. And for you, it doesn't make a difference in the handling, in the problem. Yeah. The problem difficulties are measured in points. For me, I do it for between 1 and 500 points, but you can do it however you would like to do it. So, problems. If you have a problem, you just copy it to the problems folder of your Perlin instance. In this case, these are the problems I have. The problem lucky number, although I just copied there, I haven't used it. Haven't installed it yet. And as you can see, it consists of four elements. The README is just a bonus by me, so you know what it's about. The config.json is the metadata file, where I have the points, obviously. The ports the VM uses, because the VM is not just put out in the wild. You have to specify the ports your service is using, and then the Perlin system adds a port forwarding. In this case, the service uses the port 6666, and that will get assigned a random port later on. You have a category, the tags for the search option. You can specify downloads from the content directory that people should be able to download. A name and a description, which uses these placeholders. So here, for example, the DL main will be replaced by the download link for this download. The host part, the host placeholder, will be replaced by the host, since I don't know where it's going to get deployed. And the port is the port I specified earlier. You can use that because, as I said, there will be a random port assigned that has a port forwarding to the VM's port, in this case 6666. Okay. So a lucky number in this case, let's say I want to add it to my course. Once I put it in the problems folder, I can just, via the web interface, install it for the different deployment options. Then the system will install it. This can take a second now, since it creates the VM, it provisions the VM. During this time, I can show you the problem. I showed you the config metadata. The content is just a normal directory, in this case with the program and a configuration for XENET-D. And the third part was the setup. which is just a script that insults the needed services for the problem. Here it's just a bad script, but you, in your installation, you can also use Puppet or whatever you prefer. Okay, so now it's installed the problem. I will add the problem now to the course. How is it called? Lucky number. Yeah. Again, it just makes it very easy for teachers to do these kinds of stuff. Now, yeah, starts up the VM. So here you see the tasks now is starting, and this, the task is currently running to start the VM. Yeah. I can show you, I can cheat. If I submit a flag. Ah, maybe that's also interesting. This is a task I see as a teacher, a page for a problem I see as a teacher, where I see the port forwarding that was used, the description, and the flag. The flags get created automatically. They're not always the same. They get created for the startup. So now I have the task. Can submit a flag and then... Oh, there was another here. And then I can write it right up for the teacher to read, and I receive the points. So it's CTF just made easy for organizers. Yep. So that was it. I hope you've seen a bit about the tool. I hope you think it's useful. If you have any questions or if you have trouble setting it up, there's actually a wiki page describing everything. But don't hesitate to write me. I'm glad to help. Do Fragen passt oder müssen wir? There's not really a marketplace for problems, but so far there's a wiki page listing problems available. And that's also one of the reasons why I want to put this tool out, because if somebody creates problems, or, I mean, you can also just use open source software that has known vulnerabilities and included, for example, then it would be really nice if you tell me so I can add it to the list. So far there's not a marketplace because there's not that huge amount of problems, but there's a wiki page also on GitHub listing them. And as I said, it's really easy to include them. Most of them are in Git repositories, so you just clone the repository, copy it, and then you have the problem. But if it grows and if there are more problems, there will be a marketplace, yeah. Or a catalog, yeah.
Hi, thank you for the talk. Are you aware of other people or organizations using it already? How many?
My university, where I did my bachelor's, they're using it since 3 semesters. What they do, they have worksheets during the semester, and in the end this is kind of like a final. So you have a certain threshold which is not too high and a lot of tasks, so you need to solve 3 tasks at least that were from the category that was taught in the lecture. And also this is the first time I speak publicly about the tool, but a company in Cologne uses it for training of penetration testers. The company is called Telexium. I did an internship there, I'm not there anymore. And so far everybody who used it liked it, but yeah, only my university and the ex-company I worked for using it, but they like it.
Cool.
Any more questions?
I've rather a generic question in regards to the sketch of the flat, because I think the idea is very, very good. And did you see appliances where, this is very software-centric, I believe, where it was taken out into the wild existing services so that people had to sit there and solve problems like getting a service up and running in the real world with devices and that stuff?
This is one of the main critiques of the method, yeah. Especially if you do it Jeopardy style, where you don't even have to fix the problems you've exploited. You just have to prove that you understood them. It's a interesting problem, and we have experimented with it at universities, but I haven't seen large setups where you had to patch a system or get a system running. Just, I think it would be very great, but it's difficult to organize. So maybe someone can come up with a nice solution for that, especially that scales. Because if you do it in a university, it's easy, but if you do it, let's say, online with hundreds of participants, it's not so easy to organize. So I haven't seen a large setup that does that, unfortunately. Although it would be really great, yeah.
Thanks. And a question, how long does it take usually to set up a challenge? Maybe I missed that in your speech, but what's the min and max that you have experienced to create a new challenge? Because I think that's the essence of it.
Right. Yeah. So that's, as I said, one of the reasons why I gave this talk now, because I think it's a bit of a crowdsourcing task. But there are a lot of existing CTF tasks, because a lot of organizers that held online CTFs afterwards put their tasks on GitHub or something like that, so you can use them. You can also use existing software that has vulnerabilities, for example. But making easy tasks is not that difficult, so you can set up a website that has a SQL injection vulnerability or something. It usually doesn't take so much effort, so it really depends on your standards. I think it's not much of an effort to write tasks, but to write really, really good tasks, to like take it to perfection, is almost art. As I said, there are CTF tasks that where somebody had actually wrote an operating system and stuff like that. But the basic tasks, as I showed them here, it took me maybe a couple of hours. If you make it really small, even less. Once you've done one, you kind of get a hang of it. So if you write your own problems, you per problems maybe need a couple of hours, or if you use an existing problem, just align it for per line, that's very easy, because you just need these three files. Yeah. So it's not hard, but if you want to perfection it, it's work, yeah.
Thanks a lot.
So, thank you, and maybe another round of applause.